Oh, my head.
Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, the only place that black people were allowed to be totally free in terms of any sort of involvement was through the church. And therefore, up until about 40, maybe 30, 40 years ago, it was the church that held all the museological values of black people.
This is Andromeda 21, a series of conversations, rap sessions, with speakers from the 1971 Afro-American Cultural Lecture Series held on the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign campus. The purpose of these programs is to inform and inspire, to spread the realization that black is beautiful. The title of this program refers to the Ethiopian princess Andromeda, who, like us, was in chains, became free, and later took her place among the stars.
I wish you could know what it means to be me. Then you'd see and agree that every man should be free.
My guest today is Professor Bob Ray, director of the Black Chorus here at the University of Illinois. Good afternoon, Bob.
How are you, sir?
I enjoyed the performance very much.
Well, thank you very much.
And if I can characterize it in any way, perhaps the best way to say it is, it's totally uninhibited. And I think that performance reflects your own life, which is an uninhibited life, and I have to confess, a unique experience for a black professional man in these turbulent times. How did you feel about the performance last night?
I felt very good about the performance itself, and I think greater than reflecting my own personal life, it reflects a lifestyle of black people that perhaps, due to intellectualization, is being sort of rapidly diminished. But I think black people basically are uninhibited, and it's only recently, through all our great, you know, educational advancements, that suddenly we've been put into a sort of great inhibition type bag. But basically, black people are just as uninhibited as you saw the choir and myself were last night.
Yeah, some were even, what do you say, they got happy. Is that how you refer
right,
to that?
Right.
And what happens when you get happy?
Well, it's a combination of things that are working on people when they get happy. Theoretically, it's like a totally religious experience in which the spirit of the Lord Jesus Christ is coming down and is sort of filling your body with that spirit. And the release, the only way you can release it is just it's a shouting sensation or a clapping of hands, patting of feet, any way you can let it out, just let it come out. Now, also there's a possibility of, for instance, at a given time you may have problems, pressures pressing you down, and a particular song or mood of a song can cause these things to sort of come to a head, and perhaps that is another situation, a reason for shouting, which it's a release. And the early black church, this was the only release the people had. They were being enslaved, being kept very tightly guarded. You did not have the opportunity to release. So it was in church that you could come and just sort of let it all hang out and just let everything happen.
Yeah, so you know, some of your choir members then do this during the performance, is that right?
Right, right. Most of, I would say about half to more of the choir, are very religious church people. Attend church regularly, participate very actively in church programs. And so for them, the choir is as much a cultural release as well as it is a religious release also.
Oh,
I've had a number of occasions in which the choir has sung at supposedly very high-class, intellectual-type events, in which I've had black people come up afterwards, and in a very, you know, in the very nice, subtle way that they've been taught by the white man, try to put down the choir for this kind of involvement. That is just not, you know, supposedly, as I said last night, we've come past that point in our development as black people. We no longer release our emotions. We hold them in like we've been taught through the white Western European. And I think it's just really through the Western European culture. I don't think you could say that about many other cultures in our country. I think it's just unfortunate that the Western European culture is the dominant culture, and it has said, you know, you do not release, you hold it in.
You didn't play any Mozart or Bach last night. Why so?
Well, on a concert of black religious music, I don't think Bach would quite make it. You know,
you didn't do any Handel either, by the way.
It ain't relevant.
Well, sometimes are you reprimanded for this, too?
Well, I think as an educator, I have the obligation to the choir, to the members of my group, to introduce them to and expose them to a great variety of literature, chorally, so that occasionally we will come out and do something by Bach. For instance, this year we did the Elijah by Felix Mendelssohn with the members of the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra and four very fine soloists. I do feel as though the choir has an obligation to experience many different types of music, and as their teacher I have to sort of present this to them. But the basic bulk of our repertoire and the bulk of the staples of our repertoire is the black idiom, all mediums, including jazz, rock, gospel, spiritual, and the classical, because there are a lot of classical writers, classical black writers trained in the Western European school that are writing music. And I think we cannot just write them off because they're writing in an idiom that is not particularly recognized by black people.
So when you go out to concertize, you are just being yourself. You aren't proving anything,
right.
Is that it?
Primarily, whenever we do something like the Elijah, we do it down here because I feel as though the community here, the community has a lot of gospel, rock, jazz. They don't have, black-wise, very much of the other in the way of an occasional serious classical work to be done. I think we, the black chorus, is doing something contribute to the community in that sense. But when we go out, a lot of times we're going out to all white campuses or to schools that are very largely integrated. They already have the situation of having done Bach and Elijah, so that we can present something unique to them in presenting the gospel or the black idiom, whichever we decide to do.
Well, it's a unique experience. I can't recall having ever seen a choir where the performers, as it were, become participants.
Right.
And
right.
Shout. So it's great.
Just
great. And actually, you know, the movement's moving so rapidly, we don't know what to refer to each other as. Mm-hmm. And some of the old stereotypes now have become badges of honor. So mm-hmm. Let me ask you, are black folks naturally rhythmic or not?
I think that's a very difficult question. There have been studies conducted on, you know, and certainly I can personally testify that even within the ranks of the black chorus, there are some people that rhythmically cannot get it together sometimes. However, I think it goes back to a part of our lifestyle, a situation in where the black man is a very free individual. And I think this is what gives rise to the great rhythmic precision that we have, the fact that we are uninhibited and can let ourselves go. The white culture does not even allow you, it represses all of these things, so that I think it's a situation where the black man is more immediately responsive to the rhythmic thing. As far as the natural, as far as the natural, I'm not really sure. I would hate to even make a definitive statement on that. But I think we are much more receptive to it, and as a result of it, we do it much more readily than anybody else in this country.
What is the relationship between culture and enslavement, Bob?
Well, I think, as I said last night, the only way you can really successfully enslave a people is to remove from them their cultural artifacts. By that I mean their language, taking away the music that is indigenous to them, taking away their art objects, anything that relates to their culture. If you remove all these things, you have managed to somehow enslave their mind. And this is the only way that you can really enslave. You can physiologically enslave. But as far as enslaving the mind, it takes, I think, the removal of culture from them to really get them totally enslaved.
So when we come to black music, we see a unique synthesis, I believe, of two cultures, which helped, I think, to reduce the psychological enslavement. What is that synthesis that is the definition of black music?
Oh, that's a very difficult, it's a kind of hard question to answer.
You talked about the combination of harmonic and melodic structure of Africa's merged with European structures.
There are certain unique things about, as I'm sure we're beginning to be more and more aware, about the African end of music. That is, they have their own system of scales, their own system of melodic writing, their own sort of rhythmic organization to their music. Now, what the black man did here on this continent when we came here, by being forced to hear constantly, we had to go to the white church. So by being forced to hear the sort of thing that happens in the white church with the hymn singing, the sort of German Lutheran chorales that were done quite often, you get a combination. You keep the rhythmic vitality of the African, and as we heard last night, for instance, in the chant, you keep some of the melodic organization. But by and large, you begin to get away from some of the harmonic structures and some of the melodic structures in the African form, and you begin to adopt certain of the white conventional harmonic patterns and the white melodic structure. So it's a very unique synthesis of these two combinations, and I think really, as far as I'm concerned, it's the only true American art form, original American art form, because the people that were here already derive their cultural basis from wherever they came from, namely from France, from England, or wherever they colonized from. So I think the black people somehow managed to combine both idioms and come up with a form that is uniquely American and uniquely black at the same time.
The role of the church is very important in black music, is that right?
Right. Again, it goes back to the idea that fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, the only place that black people were allowed to be totally free in terms of any sort of involvement was through the church. And therefore, up until about 30, 40 years ago, it was the church that held all the musicological values of black people. That jazz was a sort of fringe area that was, you know, growing out of the sort of church situation. So the people like Aretha, people like Billie Holiday, people like Sam Cooke, James Brown, all got their, you know, basic starts within the confines of the church. And from there, it was a simple matter of expanding upon the harmonic language of the jazz idiom or the rock idiom, and just expanding on the basic thing that they learned in terms of black singing in the church. So it is the church that held all these values for a long time.
I guess this would tie in very well with what you said about black music as a unity, as a phenomenon which embraces all aspects of our lives, as opposed to white music, which is categorized.
Right.
You said certain music for the bathroom, certain music for the dining room. Could you explain a bit more? In what way is black music just one thing? And could you give any examples of that?
Right. I think with the white Western, again, we're dealing with the Western European culture primarily, because that's where basically all of the hang-ups have come from in terms of black people. They managed to categorize music. In other words, you have a music for your church, you go to church on Sunday morning, you listen to one type of music, you come home, you go to have a drink somewhere at a bar, you'll hear another type of music entirely, totally unrelated to the kind of music that you heard at the church. No matter where you go, what the situation is, you have a different form, a different type of music for it. Now, in the black lifestyle, there's a great continuity between all types of music, so that you listen on the one hand at the music in your church on Sunday morning. You might very well go out the next day and have that drink in your local pub and hear the same song with different words, or a very similar sounding song, same harmonic structure and melodic structure, just with slight variations to suit the particular need of that particular time. So I think there is this, in black music, this great continuity. And it's a very unifying force, because black people can understand all forms of black music. You can relate to church as well as jazz.
Can you think of any songs where this has been done?
There's one song in particular.
This was a song Beautiful song. It came out of Nashville. It's called I Had a Talk with My Man Last Night.
And I think it might have been the Reverend Cleophas Robinson. I can't remember who exactly did it, but turned it into I Had a Talk with God Last Night. Basically the same exact words, just with the change of the word man, you know, to
right,
God.
And the same melody, everything.
Same melody structure, same everything.
There was another one that Ray Charles made famous called Hit the Road, Jack. Did you know what that came to in the gospel?
No, I haven't.
Get the Holy Ghost. See, he said,
never
hit the road,
that.
Jack.
Right.
And he said, get the Holy Ghost.
Right.
Everything. So it's
right.
It's deep, and it, I guess you refer to the whole phenomenon as a melting pot,
right.
Black music as a melting pot. And this gets at a at something that I got to ask you. You know, you had the whole audience united in love last night. They were standing up and clapping and shouting and begging for more. And this was all religious music. So we come to one group of militants today who want to try to take Jesus away from black people. Do you think that this is possible?
Not really. I think the whole black culture, the whole black existence is very much rooted in Christianity, in the God concept and in the Jesus concept. And I think what has to happen is that the church has to more actively involve itself in the problem of the streets. For too long, we've afforded ourselves the luxury of the church saying we're going to only deal on spiritual matters, and we've left the very real day-to-day problems of gang warfare, of poverty, of hunger, to someone else. I think the church has to actively get more involved in this. And once this happens, then I think there will be no way in the world for the militants to take away. But I think it's just as a result of the pacifism of the church that the militants have said, you know, the church is no longer relevant. Let's get out of that. That's a white man's game, a bag that he's coming out of, trying to enslave us more, you know.
In looking at it another way, it seems that our greatest leaders have been not just religious, but ministers,
right,
too.
Right.
Seems very often we forget Malcolm was a minister,
right,
Dad.
Right, right. Dr. King, certainly, a very fine Baptist preacher. The Reverend Abernathy, Reverend Jesse Jackson, all of our greater leaders now have been some oriented toward the Christian, you know, faith.
So it's like it says, is as much a part of us as kinky hair almost today. Would that be true or not?
I think very much so. Definitely so.
Thank you, Bob. We'll be continuing this conversation next week on Andromeda 21 with my guest, Mr. Robert Ray, instructor in music and director of the Black Chorus at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
Oh, my head. Thank you.
to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me.
This has been Andromeda 21, another in the series of conversations with speakers from the 1971 Afro-American Culture Lecture Series held on the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus. Your host for this series is Hank Parker, instructor in the Department of Classics at the University of Illinois.
That's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart. I wish you could know what it means to be me. Then you'd see and agree that every man should be free.
Andromeda 21 was produced and directed by Louise Geislers for WILL, the radio service of the University of Illinois in Urbana.
Like I'm long.